This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin, and as mentioned, it is our Q&A today, and we're talking about road safety with a special focus on motorcycles and kid helmets. Joining us on the show is Dr. Kulantayan K. Simani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia UPM. He's also an Associate Professor from the Department of Community Health in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at UPM, or University Putra Malaysia. As we said, if you have any questions on this subject of road safety, particularly for kid helmets, then you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
You can also join the movement to help Malaysian kids be safer on roads. Just head to bfm.my/helmets for more info. Dr. Kulan, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thanks.
So thanks. To start off with this question, motorcyclists have been identified as the most vulnerable road users. They are involved in 63% of all fatal accidents. Why is that the case?
Yeah, if you look at our statistics for last year, only 2018, the number of reported crashes were 548,598. If you break down it per day, it's about 1,500. And if you break down per minute, it's every minute one road crash reported. Bear in mind, there are some of the road crashes which we don't report as well. So if the reported numbers itself is this huge, just imagine if you add up those numbers, what is the magnitude of the problem? And the outcome from this crash, if you see, we lost last year only 6,284 lives. And that 65% are from motorcyclists. So that's where now the magnitude of the problem is. So 65% are motorcyclists, and the main reason why motorcyclists are highly involved in these road crashes, there are a few reasons. The first one, if you see, is because just look at the structure of a motorcycle. It's a two-wheel vehicle compared to any four-wheel vehicle, so the stability is much more lower. So any vehicle which is just low stability, quite difficult to handle it, to control it. That's one issue. Second is whether a motorcyclist hits anyone or anyone hits motorcyclists, the burden of the injury, the crash, is being shouldered by the motorcyclist. That's one. The second issue, if you look at, is when you compare motorcyclists against a car. In a car, the passenger is sitting inside the car. Therefore, if a crash happens, the car will hit the layer of the car first, and then only it will reach the passenger. So we have a kind of layer of protection for a car. But for a motorcyclist, we don't have that layer of protection. So any crash, the impact is directly to our body. So that's the other reason why we have high number of motorcyclists involved in crash as well as injury. These are the two main issues if you look at.
And before the crash, I mean, before we talk about accidents, we also need to talk about just safety elements, right? I mean, what are the factors that go into making road use less safe for motorcyclists? We talked earlier about just the literal facts of what a motorcycle is versus what a car is. But when it comes to other things, you know, do we need to also look at things like infrastructure, road design, you know, rider or driver behavior? How do all these things factor in?
Yeah, if you look generally, for any crash to happen, there'll be three main factors. One is the person, the road user. Second is the vehicle that he's using. And the third is environment. So when you interact these three factors, then a crash is likely to happen. Of course, statistics or studies have shown the highest contribution will be from the human error part. But keeping in mind that the other areas are also contributing, the vehicles are also contributing, the environment are also contributing. If you look at comparing, say, motorcycle against car, the safety aspects for car has been improving over years. Okay, the safety ratings are there for the cars. More safety features are being planted in for cars. Compared to motorcycles, not much has been done as well. And not much also can be done also because it's an exposed vehicle. So the best thing that we could do for motorcycle safety is to reduce exposure. If we can reduce exposure, that means the number of people using motorcycles, that will be the first gain, one. Second is, among those who are using motorcycles, if we can segregate them rather than sharing the same road with others. That would be the second benefit. Because the moment when you start sharing the roadway with other type of vehicle, which are different in size and different in speed, then whoever who drives slow, they will be at the high risk. So that's one reason why we need to shift motorcycles to another safer zone. And based on that, that's where in Malaysia we have the motorcycle safety lane. And if you know that we were the first country in the world to introduce motorcycle safety lane. And after introducing motorcycle safety lane, and we found that we had reduction of about 40% of fatalities for the same roadway before and after. So wherever we have those facilities, we kindly request that motorcyclists to start using it. Because when you start using it, then you will get the full benefit from that particular facility.
If you have any questions, you can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And just going on about the riding a bike itself, right? Riding a motorbike itself. There is this sense that there is a much higher, or rather much lower margin for error. So you are driving on road conditions that might not be certain. You know, you have a lot more safety when you are in a car. And you're also dealing with a lot of elements, right? If it rains, for example, or if you're speeding in a particular junction, and you're also very much exposed to the elements. Are bikes also just simply more physically demanding to use?
Motorcycles. If you look at a trend now, I mean, there are two trends of those people who are consuming motorcycles. One is the youth group, either before they have started working or immediately after they start working. But then gradually, if you see, this group will start owning a car as well. But that doesn't mean they stop using motorcycle. It's just they're adding up another mode of transport while they still maintain the motorcycle. So they will still use motorcycle for certain needs too. I mean, if that particular motorcycle can meet their needs for certain trips. Example, it could be in areas where they feel if it's traffic jam, if they use their car, they won't be able to reach their destination. So then they try to shift to motorcycle, which can meet their purpose. That could be one purpose. The second one is in an area where they feel that they can't get car parking lots, or difficult to get one, then they start using motorcycle for the other purpose too. The third one is if the trip is a short trip and they feel that for every short trip the risks are much more lower, then why not let's use motorcycle? Or the fourth one is if the trip is within a residential area. So based on these needs, people are still using motorcycles. Of course, based on the other factors is based on economic factors. For those who are not able to afford a car, then they will start off with motorcycle first. So if we can manage their demand, then we can shift them from this unsafe mode of transport to a safe transport. Managing their demand is one possible way is to using the public transport. But then we have to make it available for them for every of their origin to destination trip. I think somehow or other, to a certain extent, we should be able to manage this problem.
I do have to bring this up, though, Dr. Kulin, which is this issue of the bike lanes being actually available or safe to use. I mean, as you say, it is absolutely the safest option for motorcyclists to use the motorcycle lane. However, the last time we spoke about this on the show, there were a lot of, on the road reports of people basically saying, look, I use a motorcycle and I just can't use those lanes because they're not safe, because, you know, they're just very basic things like tree branches or potholes or sudden bends or lights, just the fundamentals of road safety. In some cases, for motorcycle lanes just aren't being maintained. For example, KW on WhatsApp is saying, how's the bike lane on the federal highway now? So how would you respond to people, you know, pointing out that the motorcycle lanes themselves aren't safe?
Okay. In terms of the policy, as long as you segregate them from the other road users, then you are much more safer. So on that part, we are quite clear. In terms of the science, it's quite clear. The second part is where in terms of the service provider, Okay, for those service provider of any facility, not only motorcycle, as long as any other places as well, if you don't maintain whatever facility that you provide, then people will not be able to get a full safety benefit behind that particular product. So along this way, that we what we hope is both supply and demand to meet. That means the demand from the motorcyclist to use that lane should be there, and at the same time, in terms of supply from the service provider to maintain that particular facility as well. So once both entities are up, then I believe that we could handle this issue.
We're speaking today with Dr. Kulantayan KC Mani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia UPM. If you have any thoughts on the subject of safety on the roads, particularly for kids, and you know, particularly to do with motorbikes, but in general also, just call us 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:17 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin, and live in the studio with us, Dr. Kulantayan KC Mani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia UPM, also an Associate Professor from the Department of Community Health in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at UPM. And we're looking today at the issue of road safety with a particular focus on kids and motorbikes. And we are going to get to the bit with, you know, to do it child safety, we promise. But we did want to look at helmets because that is the big thing here, right? That's the focus of our Helmets On campaign. That's just the focus of everything. Mm-hmm. So Transport Minister Anthony Loke said that an estimated 35% of all motorcyclists do not wear helmets on the road. Why is that the case?
No, okay, good. The only safety product we have for the motorcyclist, it's not the only. The most effective safety product we have for a motorcyclist is the safety helmet. And if they don't make full use of the safety helmet, they won't benefit from the whole process. The reason why I'm telling you this is, if you look at the last year only, we had more than 4,000 deaths involving motorcyclists. If you go more specific and then to look at what were the causes of those deaths in terms of which type of body injury which caused death among motorcyclists, then 56% showed head injuries. And the second highest group was multiple injuries, which was close to about 30%. And in multiple injuries, it's two part of body, more than two part of body. So it can also include head. So in conclusion, what we can say here is a death of a motorcyclist due to head injury is from a minimum of 56 up to 86%. So if you want to save a motorcyclist, we have to prevent the head injury. And to prevent the head injury, the only safety product we have in the hand now is the safety helmet. And safety helmet has already been tested. And it can reduce injury by 72% and probability of death by 39%. So our statistics is clear in terms of the magnitude of the problem. The science is clear showing that we have a product for a solution. So now the biggest challenge is to make sure people use it. So in terms of law, we have it. The law came into picture in 1973. So it's not something new. We have been there for quite more than 50 years already. So the law is there. The product is there. It's something like we have the patient. We have the medication. Now we have to move this safety helmet. Let us see the safety helmet as a vaccine. A vaccine to prevent head injury. Then if people see it in that way, I believe that somehow or other, over time period, we can address this issue.
So do we have any knowledge about what is causing that behavioural gap? You know, because like you said, the facts are there, the science is there, and yet we are seeing that huge gap. Do we know what exactly is causing that?
Yeah, there are a few issues here. The first issue, if you see here, is for short trips, people believe that they won't be involved in a crash.
Right.
So whatever messages that we are crossing, people are believing that those messages are for others, not for them. Okay? So that's one big issue for us to address them. To tell them, hey, look here, even a short trip can be as dangerous as you are. Okay, that's one. Second is, if you look at, they are using safety helmets. The percentage of using safety helmets are high, but the biggest challenge here is, are they using it properly? So there are a few studies which we have done as well, which show that among those adult helmets, the proper usage was only about roughly about 50 to 60%. And you have a balance of, say, the balance are, they are tying it, but they are tying it loosely. That means there is a huge gap between the chin and the strap. And the next issue is they're not tying it at all. Or the third group, which is about 24% who are not using a helmet at all. So if only 60% are using helmet properly, it's very clearly showing that 40%, the balance 40% who are on the bike are unsafe. And these are the group that we need to target our intervention, say for adults. For those who are tying it loosely, the message has to be crossed to them saying that if you tie it loosely, in a crash, the helmet will be removed by itself. And the best is when you are strapping your helmet, the strap has to touch your chin. Mm. Or for any reason, if you find it very much uncomfortable, the maximum gap that you could allow is only for two fingers to enter. That's it. That's the maximum gap. But we would always prefer that please make sure that the strap touches your chin. That would be the clear message. And the other issue if you look at here is, for those, are they using the CIRM certified label of helmets? If you don't use a certified helmet, a standard certified helmet, then you don't get full safety benefits behind the exercise. So that has to be taken care. The next one is, if the helmet has already been involved in a crash, the best option is not to reuse it anymore. Okay. If you have been using it for a very large period, number of years, so due to wear and tear, you may not get the exact benefit that when it was manufactured. So that is a time as well for you to change the helmets, because we have cases where helmets are being used over more than 10 years, 20 years. It's just being passed over to the next person, So for that reason, we will always prefer that it's being replaced. One is because we're not sure whether you are able to get a full safety benefit. That's one issue. The second issue is also on hygiene. Mm-hmm. Because there are many, many people using the same helmets again and again and again. And bear in mind, the helmets, when you use it, you have a direct contact point to your skin. So any direct contact point to your skin may cause sometimes certain disease to be transmitted. So on that ground, I think the helmets has to be addressed quite well.
We're speaking today with Dr. Kulanthayan Kesimani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia, about road safety with a specific focus on road safety for kids as well as road safety for motorcyclists. If you have any thoughts or questions, send them through. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
And we do have this comment from WhatsApp from Eugene that says, motorcyclists still ride as if the road is theirs, rather recklessly. Even with motorcycle dedicated lanes, they don't use it. Case in point, it's the federal highway, and during traffic jams, they will speed to go in between lanes. Is there also a factor of, I guess, rider behavior here that makes it just more unsafe, and which also makes it more compelling for them to use helmets?
Rider behavior is an issue, okay? But rider behavior is not only for rider, but we also have those elements sometimes among the car drivers as well, among all types of road users. So the behavior issue is cutting across every type of road user. So that's one point. We would always prefer that the motorcyclist should use the motorcycle lane for safety purpose. And at the same time, we have to make sure that the service provider also make sure that the motorcycle lane is safe. But having said that, also the next point that we would like to stress here is the road belongs to all type of road users. So that has to be very clearly mentioned here. So if we have cars, buses, motorcycles, everyone owns the road as well. So knowing that we have multiple type of road users, in terms of providing the service, we have to incorporate them, everyone. So my request will be, if you are stopping at the traffic lights, preferably all the motorcyclists, if they can go up front, so they are in the front, and when the light turns green, let the motorcyclists move first. So once the motorcyclists have already moved first, then they won't be sharing together with us. Mm. So the risk for motorcyclists is the moment they start sharing. So if we can allow them to move first, so they also will be safe, and we also will be safe if we are in the car. So if we can allow that, that'd be great, please.
Our next question comes from Kenson, which goes again on this issue of the attitudes of motorcyclists, saying, you know, pointing out behaviours such as ignoring road traffic rules, beating traffic lights, riding against traffic directions. Parents even do this with their kids, and then this ends up being passed down as acceptable behaviour. And also, Kenson also says, if I'm not mistaken, the law will, you know, place the wrong of any accident on the car driver instead of the motorcyclist, even if the motorcyclist was at fault. Therefore, they don't seem to have any sense of responsibility to ride safely, since all of it falls on the shoulders of other vehicle drivers. Where is law enforcement against unsafe riders? Many vehicles now have dash cams. There should be an easy way to upload and report all these outlaws.
Right. Quite a long statement over there. Okay, let me see how best we can address that. Yes, rider behavior is there. There are some of them who beat traffic lights. And the biggest risk in any crash is frontal collision. And frontal collision can easily happen in a traffic light. So if anyone breaks the traffic light, whether it's a rider or any other road vehicles, can be a car, can be a bus, doesn't matter. If you beat the traffic light, and then when you move in and then there's a crash, that means there's going to be a frontal collision. So keep in mind, in every type of crash, frontal collision will be very much risky. And most of the time, it can lead to fatal crash. Mm. So this one, we have to avoid it. Again, this message is not specifically for riders only, for everyone who uses the system. That has to be clear. Second is when they were saying that there are issues of behavior. Yes, we agree that there are issues of behavior, but then we are also saying that it happens not only for motorcyclists, but also for the other cars. Let me take you an easy example for the car drivers. Just imagine sometimes there are cases you may have seen when they have their child sitting on their lap and driving together, where they allow their child to hold the steering. So this behavior, you start showing it to the child won't feel it is wrong to sit in that seat and doing it again. Mm. So the same thing happens if you're in a motorcycle as well. If you start allowing the child to join you, or this in some cases happens during school holidays when kids start using motorcycles. Kids without license, kids below the age of obtaining the license. Some are with parents' permission, some are without parents' permission. So among those who get their parents' permission, this is where the parents, you have a role to play. You should put a stop over here. And we are very much worried every time school holidays comes, there is a high possibility of these incidents happening because the kids have more time now back at home. And it also happens during festive season when we move or when we travel back home. When we have a huge family, extended families who are at our home, and when the home is crowded, then the kids would like to move out from the home, and that's when they start moving together with their cousins or nephews, nieces on a motorbike, and more than two passengers, more than three passengers. So all this are happening, and we as parents, we as adults also have a role to play here. So if we can put a stop over there, then I think we are inculcating safety culture.
We're speaking today with Dr. Kulandayan Kesimani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia UPM, about road safety. And up next, we're going to look specifically at road safety when it comes to children. So do call us with your questions, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:36. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and we're speaking today with our guest live in the studio, Dr. Kulandayan Kesimani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia UPM, and we're focusing on road safety today with a particular look at motorcyclists as well as children. And so we spent the first half of the show really looking at this issue of motorcyclists in general, just the make of motorcycles themselves, helmets, behaviours, attitudes. Let's look at children now. The stats aren't promising when we look at children, helmets and motorbikes in that configuration. Dr. Kulin, could you remind us what they are from your own research?
If you look at statistics specifically for children, every year out of the 6,000 lives that we lost, 1,000 belongs to children. So this is a number which we can prevent, actually. Because this is a disease which we can prevent. Seriously, it's a preventable disease. And quite large number among these 1,000 people that we lose are also because they are traveling by motorcycle. Either they are using it as a rider, as an illegal rider, or as a passenger. So here, we can address it. One way is the safety product, which I was telling you, the safety helmets. In terms of the standards of the helmet, we are not much worried of it because the product is quite safe because it meets Malaysian standards. And Malaysian standard has been reviewed as well a few times. We started with the 1969 first standard, and then we reviewed it in 96, and then the latest was 2011. So in terms of safety product, we are not much worried. And not only that, if you look, in order to pass that particular safety standards, you have to go through three tests: impact testing, penetration testing, and retention testing. And Malaysia's regulation, the Malaysian standards, we are over and above the UNECE regulation. UNECE is the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe. So in UNECE regulation, they don't have penetration testing, but we have. So that's why I'm quite confident that our product is much more safer because we meet over and above with what UN's regulation is. But now we need everyone's help to make sure that every motorcycle is using it. The challenge we have among children now is, when we did our research, only 3% of the children whom are traveling are using the child helmet. Whereas 97% of the children are not using the right helmet. So what we mean here by right helmet here is, the balance here, 37%, are using a serum certified helmet, but the size is not child helmet, but it is an adult helmet. So this group has to be addressed. That means we have to tell the parents, hey, look here, it's good that you're giving them a helmet, that's fine. It's good that you're giving them a serum certified helmet, wonderful, but now the size. Just imagine if you give a big size helmet to a small kid, and the helmet can easily rotate. So in a crash, the helmet just removes by itself, and once it removes, then you don't get the safety protection. So this is the first message that we were crossing to the public. The second group which we saw was, this was about 36% of them who was using a small size helmet which fits the head of the kid. However, the helmet didn't have the serum certification label. And these helmets are like kind of plastic helmets, toys helmets, or games helmet. And these helmets are clearly, it is not for motorcycle. Even in the label, the manufacturer themselves have already put a label inside the helmet which says this is not for motorcycle use. So at manufacturing level, it's quite clear. They have already put a label, and they have manufactured those helmets for toys or games. That's it. So here's the point where we have to empower the consumers, saying that when you are purchasing a child helmet, please look for the serum certification label to appear at the rear end of the helmet. And in that label, there should be a word there which mentions motorcycle helmet. So look for the label, and in that label, look for the word motorcycle helmet. So if we can empower the consumers on this part, I think we could address this issue. So this is the second issue that we need to address. And the third issue is where about 24% who are not using helmet at all. So this group where we have to tell them is, every time you're on a bike, you have to protect your head. So three messages quite clear. One is get the right size helmet. Two is get a serum certified helmet. And the third one is make sure that every time your kid uses a helmet, and tie it properly. And the maximum, the best is to make sure that your strap touches your chin, or for any uncomfortable reason, only 2 finger space to enter. So if this is the three messages that we would like to strongly cross it over to people, to public.
We have this thought here from Toby that says the price of a certified helmet is, according to colleagues who ride bikes, comparatively expensive, around 200 ringgit for a basic one. I know a few people whose helmets were stolen, and there's this question here: could any relevant commission involved ensure the prices of such necessities like helmets be regulated and kept low?
Okay, in terms of safety aspect and in terms of our experience, we could address this. Safety helmets are being produced locally as well, in Malaysia as well. And the market price, as far as we know, is in the range of 60 ringgit, around there. So I'm not sure about the 200 ringgit. A 60 ringgit helmet available in the market has Cirium certification label.
Does the higher cost translate to a better quality helmet? And maybe I'm just thinking, is that why that a helmet could cost around 200 ringgit?
No, even a 60 ringgit helmet has already met the Cirium certification, Cirium test, the penetration test, retention test, and impact test. So that's fine. So that's taken care. And even the adult helmet's price is almost the same price as the child helmet price. So no issue on that part. If a parent is willing to spend money to buy a helmet and not knowing there is a child helmet and they go and buy an adult helmet, that means in terms of purchasing power they have, there's no issue. Just that they were not aware that there is a child helmet. Therefore, they were spending the same amount of money to an adult helmet. So to do this group, we are trying to cross a message, hey, look here, for the same amount of money or almost same amount of money, you have a child helmet, shift your purchase over there. That's one. Second is, if you're buying a toys or games helmet, yes, that helmet is much more cheaper. You can get it available. You can get it in night markets or what. Maybe could be around the range of 20 ringgit or what. But keep in mind, 20 ringgit roughly for a non-standard helmet compared to 60 ringgit a standard helmet. And a helmet, you can use it if it's not involved in a crash, and it's in a good condition, no falls much, roughly. There's no specific period, but roughly you could go along about 5 years. So for 60 ringgit, if its lasting period is 5 years, per year is 12 ringgit, per month is 1 ringgit. So just look at the amount of investment you're putting in and the safety benefits that you get behind it. Bear in mind, a toys or plastic or games helmet doesn't give you any safety protection. And what we are more worried is, just imagine a plastic helmet, in a crash, it can crack. And when it cracks, the plastic can be very sharp. And just imagine the kind of injury that it can create to your skull. So I think quite clear in terms of those things. So let's move towards standard certified helmets.
Now, having said that, I mean, there is this, when we were looking this up, there is a myth in Vietnam that said helmets are bad for children's necks. And then because of that, some parents did not want to make their children use helmets because they believed that the risk from a neck injury or a chronic neck injury would be much worse than an accident that may or may not happen. Like you said, sometimes people have this assumption that messages are not for them. So are there any myths locally surrounding the use of helmets that you've heard of?
No, the science is the same, no matter where. There are small, very, very, very minor incidents of these neck injuries happening. But just put a comparison. By not using a helmet, does it make you safe? So if the answer is no, then it's quite clear already. In a very rare incident where the helmets can create neck injuries. But in that kind of crash, if you don't use a helmet, you're also going to have the same or even worse kind of head injury. Forget about neck. You will even have a head injury because there's nothing to save your head. So everywhere they are quite consistent. Scientists are quite consistent that a helmet is the best safety protection product which is available at present to save your head and brain.
While we're talking about the issue of cost as well as having the correct size, well-fitted helmet, if you want to help kids be safer on roads, you can contribute to that. You can sponsor, again, a well-fitted, correctly sized helmet today for just 50 ringgit. You can check that out at bfm.my/helmets. We're going to be continuing this conversation with Dr. Kulin after this. If you have any questions on the subject of road safety, particularly as it pertains to kids, you can call us at 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:48 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin, and we are in the studio today with Dr. Kulanthayan Kesimani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia, UPM, and we're talking about safe kids, or hopefully safer kids on the road. And we've turned our attention to children and helmets, but one thing that I did want to talk about, and this is a consistent theme through all the messages that we have been getting today, or almost all, earlier we were talking about attitude and behaviour and culture when it comes to motorcyclists in general. And now that same theme is extending through for children, because there is this concern that we just don't have that culture here. We just don't have the culture of believing that it's a problem, or, you know, of wanting to change our behaviours. And Dr. Kulan, your response throughout our chat has been to turn back to science and facts and numbers. And I'm curious whether that really works, or whether we need to do something else to address this issue of, it's not me, it's never me, you know, I ride safe, it's not me, and my children are fine, don't worry. So do you think that something more needs to be done to address this?
Yeah, I mean, for sure the statistics we need, so that we know that how are we performing, that part will be needed. And we always follow based on what science says, so that we know what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So that when we are promoting any products or any intervention program, we should promote something which is good. One way forward to manage this huge problem is if we can start moving from private vehicle to public transport. Mm. In that way, we can manage these issues. The reason why I'm telling this is, just imagine for the population of Malaysia, we have 30 million population, but the vehicle population is more than 25 million. And vehicle is growing at 6%, whereas population is growing at 2%. So eventually, in just a couple of years, the number of vehicles is going to be equal to number of population. And this is one reason why we are facing this huge problem of number of road crash and road fatalities. So we are not seeing completely leave private vehicle, but what we are saying is gradually move to public transport. That's one. Or not every of your trips you have to do it using private vehicle. If there are any trips from origin to destination which public transport is available, then why not you shift towards that? So at least we can reduce the risk for certain trips. That's number two. Ken, did I answer your question?
Yeah. I think you know, on the subject of just trying to change behaviors, but specifically, I think when it comes to children, you know, because that's sort of a broader picture of how to address road safety. But in terms of getting helmets on children's heads, I guess, you know, what is the story, or what is the message that you think is really going to work?
Right. We should believe that we are using the safety product for the safety benefit, and instead of using the safety product to fulfill enforcement needs. That attitude has to change. So that attitude, not only for children's product, even for adult product as well. So what we don't want is, you have the helmet, but when you see an enforcement agency in front, then you start wearing it. That means you don't believe in the product. You're just using it in order to fulfill this, the regulation needs. So that culture has to change. So if we can change that culture, that'd be great. And for children's, if we can inculcate the safe culture from the beginning itself, see, if every time the kids on the bike, they are using helmet, over time period, say one day, if they don't have a helmet, they will feel very uncomfortable and very uneasy. Mm. They will really find it very uneasy, and they will request for the helmet. Mm. So that is what we need to do. And if they start using helmets, say example, we can even start even earlier, if they start using bicycles, we can start asking them to use bicycle helmets. Of course, bicycle helmet is not by law at this point of time. But if you believe that a bicycle helmet is a safety product, is a vaccine to prevent head injuries, then why are you waiting for it to become a law? You are using it for your purpose, not for other people's purpose. So if a small kid from bicycle itself using bicycle helmets, then when gradually he moves to motorcycle, he uses a motorcycle helmet. And then when he sits in the car, he will use the child seat, or he will start using seat belt. That means every safety product, he will start using it to comply with it. Forget about whether you have it a law or not, or forget whether you have enforcement activity or not. No, you are not using it for their purpose. So if this part, if the adults can practice, first thing, adult has to practice it. And then they should inculcate this practice, share this with their children. And if both do it together, And I think to a certain extent, we can win this war. And keeping in mind, at this point of time, road safety education is being introduced in schools, mm-hmm. in primary schools. So safety messages are being taught in schools. So if in the classroom the teachers teach that you shouldn't beat traffic light, you should use safety products. But back home when they come back, if the practice is inconsistent with what being taught in the class, then you're putting the kid in a very conflict situation. So try to prevent that. Try to avoid that. Try to complement whatever being taught in the class. So the way forward could be for the parents to look at the road safety education book being provided for their children so that they know what's being taught and they try to complement that. Okay.
We have quite a simple question here from Roslyn, who wants to know, is a bicycle helmet the same as a motorcycle helmet?
It's two different types of helmet. The size is different, the weight is different. The reason is because the speed is different as well. Okay? So you can't interchange use it. No way. A motorcycle helmet is designed for motorcycle and a bicycle helmet designed for bicycle. Yeah.
And I guess we also, on that note, right, we have this message here from KH that asks, do we have any special helmets for Sikh people? Are they allowed to not wear a helmet?
The Malaysian law exempts them from wearing one. Okay, that's for under the religious purpose. Okay, so they get an exemption. So in terms of compliance with the regulation, yeah, if they don't wear, they are still complying because they get exemption. So having said that, that is on the regulation part. On the safety part, only safety helmet can give you the safety protection for your head. Yeah.
And, you know, I just looking at some of the ways we can move forward from this, right? You know, just on that note, when you do run road safety education campaigns in schools, what are the common responses? What kind of questions do kids ask about safety?
Okay, when we run road safety education programs in schools, we make sure for our intervention days, we get the parents together. If it's a primary school, we always try our best to get the parents together because the decision whether the kid is going to use a helmet or not is not purely with the kid. It's partially also with the parents. The parents has to make this product available in the first place. The parents has to ask the kid to use it. So that's why we prefer that this both party has to come together. So that's one. And when we empower the parents, and usually we prefer to empower both of them together. Mm. So we tell them why is motorcycle is a risk. And if you're still using motorcycle, what you can do to reduce those risks. The best thing is, the first choice is always move to public transport. If no, if you're going to still use motorcycle, the speed of your vehicle has to go down. So we tell them what is the risk if you're riding it fast. And then knowing that your size is small, you're only one-third of the size of a car. Just bear in mind. If I park one car, then it's equivalent to I park three motorbikes. So when your size is small, that means the probability for me to see a motorcycle is low. So that's why it attracts more. I mean, they are more likely to be involved in a crash. So now when we know the probability to be seen is low, how can we increase that probability? So one way is make sure that during daylight, you still on your lights. Even by law, that says so. That means at every point of time, your motorcycle lights has to be on, whether it's daytime or nighttime. Nighttime, you on the lights for you to see the roads. Daytime, you on the lights for others to see you much better. So this one has to be clear among all motorcyclists. One. And then to make sure that you are much more visible is your attire. Of course, the color is your choice. Some people like bright colors, some people like dark colors. That's your choice, no problem. But what we are requesting in the nighttime, if you're traveling, motorcyclists, you have to wear bright. Then people can see you. So if I can see you up front, then I can reduce my speed and I can prevent a crash from happening. Or even your helmets can be bright. As long as any product within you, either your helmets or your attire is bright. Okay? So that just to help others to see you. So, and then your rear end lights. This is another challenge. Most of the time, we don't know whether our rear end light is working or not because it's behind us. So, but we have to check that part as well. Because if your rear end lights doesn't work, then it doesn't help for the cars who are coming from behind to know whether there's something in it. So, if every motorcyclist can take this kind of mitigation process, exercise, by reducing your speed, and then using the safety products, to a certain extent, we can reduce their risk. And wherever you have an opportunity to shift to public transport, please, by all means, shift it. And then the other one that I would like to really highlight here is on the enforcement part. Very quickly, I mean, see enforcement as part of education. Mm-hmm. And when the enforcement activity is happening, don't get angry with them, don't scold them. See them as they're trying to save your lives. Okay? So if every road user starts seeing enforcement activity as an education process and as an effort to save our lives, then try your best to say thank you to those enforcers who are enforcing for our safety. Okay? If that culture change can be happened, it would be great. And one final one is Malaysia, we have a safety culture. If you realize that, we start our day with selamat pagi, selamat tengah hari, selamat datang. Every time, every element of the whole day is the word selamat is there. Can we just move that towards the road as well? Thank you.
Dr. Kulan, thank you so much for joining us today. That was Dr. Kulan Dayan K.C. Mani, Executive Director of Safe Kids Malaysia UPM. And remember, if you want to help kids be safer on the roads, you can sponsor a well-fitted, right-sized helmet today for just 50 ringgit. Head over to bfm.my/helmets to find out how. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.